Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on legal analysis when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said when he was running for president that what Americans wanted, though, was jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It isn't measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's why I contend that it's time we cashed in on our inheritance and learned how to collect these benefits of this old covenant contract and to collect our benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil in real property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for our free general law CD package. That's free of charge. It didn't cost anything. It's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative. It's entertaining. It's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Then click onto our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's, again, georgegordon.org. All right, we've been talking about legal analysis, and the last time we took up this thing of the cult charge. And then I went through the cult charge, and I showed you that cult does not fit with the facts in my case. That doesn't mean that people aren't going to call me a cultist or a cult leader. People call other people names all the time, and I don't wear my feelings on my coat sleeve, and if you want to call me a cultist, you know, get after it. I've been called worse. But it isn't true. Cult is the wrong word to use. It's the wrong term. It's not the right legal term to describe those facts. Now, that's what legal analysis is all about. The judge or the decision maker, fact finder here, has to analyze the law, compare it with the facts, put the facts and the law together, and arrive at a conclusion. That's why I said that many times people will say, I'm not guilty, when in fact they are. And then oftentimes they will admit to their guilt. Yes, I'm guilty, when in fact they are not guilty. So legal analysis is important for you when you are charged with a crime, such as the policeman gives you a ticket and he says, hey, you're doing this, that, or another thing, or you failed to do this, that, or something else. And it's probably true. 85% of the time, you are, in fact, guilty. But 15% of the time, you're not guilty. And being able to code plead out those charges is simply taking the dictionary, both legal and standard, looking at each word in the complaint, because each word has a definite meaning. Now, it's oftentimes the case that people will use words that they believe are synonymous terms, such as foul-mouthed, vulgar, profane, pervert, and obscene. Those are not synonymous terms, and each one of them has a separate, distinct meaning. So that when we apply the real definition and meaning of each one of those words, it may well be that one or more of those fits, and then maybe two or three of those do not fit. And in a case, all five of them have to fit, and if one of the five don't fit, well, then you're not guilty. Here's an example. In kidnapping, there are five elements to the state's prima facie case. If, for instance, the victim is not concealed, you don't have a kidnapping. You can be demanding ransom. You could have taken somebody and moved them across state lines, but that doesn't constitute kidnapping. You can have an intent with an act. You can be concealing or not concealing the victim. And if you're not concealing the victim, you do not have a kidnapping. And this is what we call the prima facie case. And the government has to prove a prima facie case, and usually it'll have four or five elements. If any one of those elements is missing, the state cannot prove its prima facie case, and you're innocent. You may believe you're guilty, you may have done the act, but if you didn't have intent, you're not guilty. You may plead guilty, and you may be punished, but that doesn't mean that you were guilty. You may have been in that 15% where you were actually innocent. And I've pointed that out to you a time or two. My old friend Peter Watt, for instance, pled guilty to polluting the air. I went in, pled not guilty, defended. The case was dismissed because there was no statute. Hadn't been enacted yet. You can't violate a law that hasn't been enacted yet. But he could not come back and reverse out his conviction because he had pled to it voluntarily. He believed he was guilty. He wanted to plead guilty. He wanted to pay a $300 fine, put it behind him. He didn't want to have to go to trial. I said, let's go to trial. Let's go litigate. Let's prove we're innocent. And I did. So that's the case here. This is what legal analysis is all about. So first of all, we want to do our legal analysis right here before we go to trial to see if we're on the right side of the issue or on the left side. So when somebody makes an allegation, for instance, and says, I'm a cult leader, well, gee, maybe I am a cult leader. Let's take a look at the word cult. Let's plead it out. Let's see what the allegations are and see whether or not it fits. If it doesn't fit, well, then let's deny it. Now, failure to deny an allegation is the equivalent of admitting to it. So if somebody says that I am a tax evader, then it's incumbent upon me to create the contested issue of fact and deny it by saying, I deny it. I am not a tax evader. Now, most people would say, well, I'm going to plead not guilty. They believe that pleading not guilty is the equivalent to a denial. It isn't. It isn't. It pleads into a fiction of law is what it does, and oftentimes it's the kiss of death. And from there, you can't get to here. That's what happened to Reynolds. He pled not guilty to a charge of polygamy, and the issue was resolved upon, well, did you or did you not have two wives? And the answer was, well, yeah, he did. But having two wives does not necessarily mean that you violated the polygamy law. To violate the polygamy law, you had to have a marriage license, and there wasn't any evidence in the record that he had a marriage license, but there was a presumption of law that he did because he pled not guilty. So his pleadings were incorrect, and he was convicted. Was he guilty? Yeah, he was guilty of bad pleading, and he may have been guilty of polygamy. I don't know that, but had he demurred instead of pled, then he would have won his case because the government couldn't prove that he had a marriage license, or that would have been the issue, and they didn't do that. And there was a guy that came in to testify against him, and when they asked him if he was a polygamist, he said no, he was a fornicator. Fornication, boys and girls, isn't against the law. Well, it doesn't violate the law of Utah, and it doesn't violate the law of the United States. No, it violates the law of God. So from that point of view, fornication is against the law. But it doesn't violate the law of the United States to be a fornicator. They encourage that. They discourage polygamy. Now, the Bible doesn't encourage polygamy, but it doesn't discourage it either. And there are 24 cases of polygamy in the Scripture, and it's a social status created by God Himself. So what happens here is that the religious people decided that God made a mistake, and they're going to fix his mistake by outlawing polygamy. Well, the same thing happens in a number of other areas that we're involved in here in our everyday life. Religious people set the agenda for vulgar, foul-mouthed, profane, perverted, and obscene language. Profane, perverted, and obscene and foul language is bad, but not vulgar language. And we'll talk about that as we progress along. And I'll show you here that just because you've got certain words that are declared by self-professed religious people who want to be the people who make the decisions or decide what speech is right and wrong, or good or bad, it doesn't mean that that's necessarily true. The Bible is full of words that are vulgar, but they're not obscene, they're not perverse, and they're not foul. And so people have set themselves up to correct God, to correct the language of the Scripture, which is written in vulgar language, by the way. The Scripture is vulgar, and it is written in common language or vulgar language. But I wanted to start off today with tax evader, tax cheat, and tax fraud. And I deny that I'm a tax evader, tax cheat, or tax fraud. I've had that label hung on me more than once, and I want to deny it. Just like I want to deny that I'm a cult leader or charismatic. Just because I'm a public speaker doesn't make me charismatic. I may be. I said, I'll leave it up to you. You're the jury. I'll leave it up to you to decide, but I'm not making that claim. Now, a tax evader is a criminal. He's a guy who incurs a tax and then evades or fails, refuses, or doesn't pay it. A tax cheat is somebody who is paying his taxes, but he's cheating on his taxes. He's not paying all of it. And then there's a tax fraud. This is where a guy actually appears to be paying his taxes, but he is criminally defrauding the government of its revenue. So we have tax fraud, tax cheats, and we have tax evaders. Now, a cheat and a fraud is, you know, similar, but the guy that's cheating over here is filing his taxes, and he's taking the wrong deductions, or he's taking more deductions than he's entitled to. But a tax fraud is where the guy is actually lying. He comes forward, and he puts forth a lie. And he defrauds the government of its revenue in that way. A tax evader now can be using cheating or fraud, defrauding in order to evade the tax. Or he may just not be filing a tax return at all. And so the other day, one of our prosecuting attorneys, after we'd testified in court, he said, I'm going to turn you into the IRS. Sounded like Judy Hartson to me. I'm going to turn you into the IRS. Because you're not filing your tax returns. Now, it is true. This is where pleading into a fiction of law comes into play, as opposed to demurring. I'm going to demur to that. I'm not going to plead to it. I'm going to demur to it. I don't file tax returns because I don't reach the filing minimum. I avoid having income. Income is against the law. It violates the law of God. I don't have a Social Security number. I rescinded it. And I don't pay Social Security tax. But then I don't have income. I've avoided income. It's not against the law to have property, to deal in property. It's against the law to deal in income and then not pay the income tax. But there's no law that says we have to deal in income. So the Bible teaches us to deal in property and tithing, and the government teaches us to deal in income and profit and pay an income tax on that gain. That's a criminal activity. That's Canaanite trafficking. We're told not to do that. So here at the law school, what we do is we teach people the distinction between the two and then say, why don't you go make a choice? I'm not here to tell people that they shouldn't join up with the government, pay income tax and Social Security. If that's what you want to do, get after it. But if you do that, then you'll be in violation of the law of God. And it's bad business to do that. Now, oftentimes people will cite Matthew 22. Let's take a look at Matthew 22, where it says, render unto Caesar those things which are Caesar's. Listen to this. Let's see if that really means what you've been taught that it means. First of all, it's in Matthew 22, verse 15. Listen to this. He says, then went the Pharisees, and they took counsel as to how they might entangle him in his talk. So first of all, the Pharisees. Now, these are religious people. These are what we call Christian evangelists today. You know, if you were going to identify the Pharisees, scribes, and the Sadducees of the day, we would be calling those the politically correct religious elite. They would be the evangelists and televangelists, you know, like Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, Oral Roberts, Jim Baker, and so on. Or the pulpit parrots of the day, the people that are in the clergy, who are telling you that you ought to render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. You know, the religious leaders of the day, they tell you, they've got four standards here for determining whether you're a good Christian, and that is, obey the laws of your state. The Bible is a good book, but it's full of mistakes. Pay your taxes and don't use bad words. Don't use vulgar language. Now, if you do that, Jesus will love you and you'll go to heaven. Now, the problem with that is that obey the laws of your state violates Acts 5:29 and Leviticus 18, verses 3 through 5. The Bible is a good book, but it's full of mistakes is a lie, because that violates John 10:35 and 2 Timothy 3:16. The Scripture says the Scripture cannot be broken in John 10:35, and the Scripture is profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction in 2 Timothy 3:16. I know what the preachers are telling you. It's a good book, but it's full of mistakes. But that's a lie. That's not true. And pay your taxes. Well, here we are in Matthew 22, verses 15 through 22, and don't use bad words. Well, bad words are called vulgar. We'll take a look at vulgar as we progress along. Vulgar is the language of the commoners. That's not a crime. Jesus was a commoner. Jesus was vulgar. But he wasn't profane, and he wasn't obscene, and he wasn't a tax protester, and he wasn't a tax cheat, and he wasn't a tax fraud. He didn't pay income tax, Social Security. He didn't have contracts with Caesar, because that violated the law of God. And he set us an example that we ought to follow. And the people who were opposed to this, the people who were the religious people, the people that were in the government, the people that were in the religion, the people that were the leaders and the college professors and the teachers and the religious guys, they came along and said, hey, let's figure out a way that we can entangle him in his talk so that we can get him for incitement of the people, violation of the law, and have him prosecuted and jailed. They had an evil intent. And they sent out to him some hypocrites called disciples with the Herodians, saying, Master, we know that you're true, and you teach the way of God in truth, and neither carest thou for any man, because you regard not the person of men. Hey, are they stroking him here? Hey, telling him just exactly what anybody'd want to hear. He said, tell us therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? They wanted him to say, don't pay your income tax, don't pay your Social Security, so that they could brand him as a tax protester, a tax cheat, a tax fraud, and have him prosecuted for conspiracy to defraud the government of its revenue. That's what we call it today. So, now listen up, because we've got the same problem today that he had at that point in time, in that point in history. So, if you got a minute here, take your wallet out and take out a Federal Reserve note. I've got one right here. Here's a Federal Reserve note. Now, listen to what Jesus told these guys. He said, Jesus perceived their wickedness, and he said, "Why do you tempt me, you hypocrites?" He branded them just what they were. He just said, "Hey, you religious hypocrites, let me brand you for what you are." So they were asking him a forked question. Are you still beating your wife on Wednesday? Now he's going to answer that forked question. Listen to this. He said, "Bring me the money. Show me the tribute money. Show me the tax money." And they brought him a penny. And he said unto them, "Well, then, whose image and superscription is on it?" And they said to him, "Caesar's." And he said to them, "Then render therefore to Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things which are God's." And when they heard this answer, they marveled, and they left and went their way. Okay, that's exactly the correct answer. Most of you people out there have social security numbers. When you come into this classroom, you come in here with citizenship and social security numbers, you're taxpayers, you got birth certificates, marriage licenses, business licenses. And what you're doing out there, dealing with unjust weights and balances with these Federal Reserve notes. Now just look at the top of it. It's a piece of paper, and it says Federal Reserve Note, United States of America, and this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. This is called a chosen action in law. It's a right of recovery in interstate commerce. It's an act of Canaanite trafficking. It's a part and parcel with commerce and comes under the Commerce Clause, and that's where the income tax is derived. The income tax is a tax on unjust weights and balances, which are prohibited in Leviticus 19, 35, and 36. It's derivative of a contract called Social Security that you have with the government that you entered into and made yourself a taxpayer. Now, you taxpayers who have a contract with Caesar should render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, these fiat paper notes called Federal Reserve notes, because your Creator told you not to use fiat paper money. He told you to use just weights and balances. He gave you gold and silver to dig out of the hills. And our founding fathers followed that principle of law, and they gave us gold and silver coinage under the Coinage Act of 1792, which we followed until 1933 when Franklin Roosevelt gave us House Joint Resolution 192 and took our gold away, and then Lyndon Johnson took our silver away with the Coinage Act of 1964. All right, now, because we've done these things, we owe the income tax, if, in fact, you're still under contract. And you should render to Caesar that which is Caesar's, his worthless fiat paper money, which is called income. Now, the law requires that you stop doing that. Now, if you would stop dealing in income and deal in property, you wouldn't have a tax to pay because property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States. And it isn't assessed or taxed in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, or Western Europe either. The Anglo-Saxon countries, the Anglo-Saxon people, from the time we left Mount Sinai until I speak right now, have not, do not, and we don't tax property. We tax commerce. We tax privilege. We tax the unjust weights and balances. And that's the penalty that you pay. The income tax and Social Security takes about one-third of everything you create and pay, or create and produce, and it is the penalty that you pay for the violation of Leviticus 19, 35, and 36, and thou shalt not steal, in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. So that's how simple that is. Now, over the years, I've been investigated by government. Listen, boys and girls, and because of this radio program and because of my school, my government has more taps on my telephone than the telephone can sometimes take. Twice I've had to call the phone company and tell them that the reception is so bad that they have to take some of the telephone taps off. Because if you don't, you can take the phone out because I can't hear when people call me. And so then they go to, I don't know who they're going to, probably the FBI, maybe my local sheriff, the IRS, the State Tax Commission, maybe the CIA, maybe the NIS, and God knows who else. and they have to take off or combine two or three of those taps so that I can receive calls from my students. Now, that's the way that goes. Now, listen, these people are seeking to entrap me in my talk. They want to take something out of my mouth on the air or over the internet or from my written or printed material for which they can accuse me. But boys and girls, in 25 years, I stand unaccused. Now, nobody from the government is saying or has said, not yet, that I'm a tax evader, a tax cheat, or a tax fraud. They're not making that claim. Nobody's prosecuted me. Furthermore, over the last, well, not the last 25 years, but in my business career, I've been through five audits. Five. I have not been audited since 1980. But between 1966 and 1980, in that 14-year period, I was audited five times, and I passed all five of my audits. Now, I dropped out of the tax system in 1978 through 1984. I dropped out. Boys and girls, I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I deal in property, and I don't deny it, but I don't deal in income, and I avoid it. And the tax is on income. And so I'm not a tax evader, not at all. And I'm not advocating tax evasion. I'm not advocating tax cheating. Neither did Jesus. He said, you need to render to Caesar that which is Caesar's, and render to God that which is God's. Now, if you want to know what God's is, go to Malachi 3, verse 8. Now, let me show you the answer to the riddle. He said, will a man rob God in Malachi 3, 8? Yet you've robbed me, but you say, wherein have we robbed you? And that's in tithes and offerings, and you're cursed with a curse because you've robbed me, even this whole nation. Now, remember, Jesus didn't sin. Jesus did not break the law. He tithed. He didn't pay income tax to Caesar. How do I know that? Because he said in Matthew 6:24, no man can serve two masters. Only you Mormons can do that. See, Mormons pay tax and tithe. They do both. Jesus said you can't serve two masters. You can't serve Caesar and God. You either pay your tax to Caesar or you pay your tithe to God. Jesus wasn't suffering from a curse. Jesus paid his tithe. He did not pay taxes. He didn't deal in unjust weights and balances and commerce and Canaanite trafficking. He dealt in property. And that's what I'm advocating. I advocate the Ten Commandment model. I'm saying I think that that would be better for all of us if we did that. Now, there was a second story here that's in Matthew 17 that dealt with taxes. Let me flip over to that one quickly. Sometimes people will cite this one too, and they'll say, well, Jesus advocated paying his taxes, and here's where he paid his taxes. That's not true. Listen to this. In Matthew chapter 17, listen to this, verse 24. When they were come to Capernaum, they that received the tribute money came to Peter, and they said, well, does your master pay tribute? Does your master pay taxes? And Peter said, yes, he pays taxes. Now, that wasn't true. If Jesus was paying taxes, then he was committing idolatry. That's a capital felony. Jesus wasn't committing idolatry. He didn't pay these taxes. How do I know that? Because he said so right here. Now, listen to this. Pay attention. Now, Peter said, yes, he pays taxes. Now, when Jesus was come into the house, he anticipated what Peter had said. And he said, well, what do you think, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom and tribute? Of their own children or of strangers? And Peter said unto him, well, of strangers. Well, Jesus said to him, then are the children free? Listen, the children don't pay the taxes. It's the strangers that pay the taxes. It's the foreigners and the aliens that pay the taxes. And the reason that you people are paying tax to Caesar is because you're foreigners and aliens. You're not citizens of the Kingdom of Israel. You're citizens of the United States of America. And you should pay your tax to the United States of America and Canada and Australia and New Zealand and Germany and Russia. You should render to Caesar that which is Caesar's. But why don't you think about changing that and going back to your nativity, going back to your roots, and practicing the law of God and the Ten Commandments and paying your tithes and stop paying the tax? I know it's a wild new idea, but I thought I'd throw that out to you. He went on in verse 27, he says, "Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, now that you've opened your big mouth, go thou to the sea and cast a hook and take up the fish that first comes up. And when you have opened his mouth, you'll find a piece of money. That take and give unto them for me and thee." Now, who's paying the tax? It's Peter. Pay attention to the last verse, 27. Now, where is the money coming from? It's not coming from Jesus. It's not even going to come from Peter. He said, we're going to take this money out of a fish's mouth. We're going to work a miracle over here. You opened your mouth, and all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you, Peter, is going to be furnished by you. Now, lest we offend them, lest we create a tax evasion here, because you have admitted that we're taxpayers. Falsely. You went in here and pled into a fiction of law, Peter. Now, we've got to correct our pleadings. So go pick up this fish. There'll be a piece of money in there. So that we don't violate the law of God, let's go get this piece of money out of a fish's mouth, so that it doesn't come from us, so that we don't offend. Peter went over and paid the tax. Jesus didn't. He told Peter, you go pay the tax, big mouth. You're the one that pled into the fiction of law. The correct response was simple. It was, that man is an adult, and he can speak for himself. Go ask him. That's what he should have done, and say, hey, why don't you go ask him? What are you asking me for? All right, it's halfway point here, boys and girls. Let me give you a reminder that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters now to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this local radio station or this radio network. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about code pleading and legal analysis. Legal analysis. Now, I took some issues that have been raised over the years by people. Some of them probably well taken, some of them probably leading and suggestive, but the charges or the allegations that people make against me, they call me sometimes a tax evader, tax cheat, fraud, cult leader, foul mouth, vulgar, profane, pervert, obscene, illiterate, a thief, cheat, unlettered, ignorant, politically incorrect, a liar, false prophet, and a blasphemer. Some of those on the list, some of those things are true. Now, if you were to take that as a complaint and you were to plead not guilty, it would be false because some of those charges are true. I am, in fact, I'll just tell you what I am. I am, in fact, vulgar, and I am unlettered, and I am ignorant, and I am politically incorrect, and I am a liar. Now, the rest of this on here I deny. And I want to go through each one of these over here and explain it. So, it isn't, you know, when you hear somebody say, well, are you a liar? Let me just take up liar here just as an illustration here, like vulgar. If I were to ask you, just listen up here now, let me ask you, are you a liar? And if you're a normal Joe Sixpack, you'd say, well, no, I'm not a liar. I don't lie. Well, let me ask you the follow-up question. Have you ever lied at any time in your life in the past? Just one time. Kind of like asking Judy Hartson. Judy, you know, standing there in your little Mary Jane's, you know, the virtue of the Trinity Lutheran school here. Have you ever told a lie? Just one little lie one time in your life? I think most people would say, yeah, I did once. Okay. Then you're a liar, past tense. Let me ask you a question again. Do you think that maybe, just possibly, before you die, sometime in the future, one more time, that you might lie, just a little white one more time? I think, if you're honest, you're going to say, yeah, probably one more time before I die, I probably will lie one more time. Just a little white lie, though, but nothing big and black. Okay, so then you're a liar past tense and you're a liar future tense, and that's two. Now what I want to determine is, are you a liar now present tense? So have you told a lie in the recent past? Just a little white lie. Maybe you told your wife the meatloaf was really good when it was burned and it was really gross. And you lied to her just a little bit. Have you lied just recently? And then I think most of us would say, I've lied recently. Well, then you're a liar past, present, future. Now, isn't that what a liar is? I didn't say that you were a real big bad liar. I just said you're a liar. So when people say George Gordon is a liar, the scripture says, let God be true, though every man be found a liar. If I said to you, I am not a liar, I would be a liar. So when people say George Gordon is a liar, and I say, I don't deny it, I am a liar, I admit it, am I lying to you or am I telling you the truth? All right, now that being the case, all of you people out there that accuse me of being a liar, you're telling the truth. It is true, I am a liar. But so what? If everybody, and there's 6.5 billion of us on the planet, if it says plainly, let God be true, though every man be found a liar, well then there's 6.5 billion liars on planet Earth, and I'm one of them. you might as well say, George Gordon has blonde hair. And I'd say, well, so what? George Gordon has blue eyes. Look at that blonde, blue-eyed Gordon. You can make a reproach of it. And I'd say, well, that's right. I'm blonde and blue-eyed, and I'm a liar. Okay, so now what else is new? What's your problem here, Pete? So I'm just simply going to say, well, okay, I'm a liar. Now let's take the word vulgar. Sometimes people say, my God, that guy's vulgar. Well, the word foul-mouth, vulgar, profane, perverted, and obscene are not synonymous terms. But oftentimes, religious people, when they're trying to identify people that use bad words, and this is where Judy Hartson really shined, because out on the playground, whenever I would use bad language, vulgar language, then she would shine. She would run right in and tell Mr. Witt. But she didn't go in and tell Mr. Witt until she first informed me that she was going to tell on me. And so she would put her hand over her mouth and gasp for air and say, I'm going to tell Mr. Witt. And so Judy, God love her, she would go in and tell Mr. Witt, and he would take me into the office and explain to me that those were vulgar, profane, obscene, foul-mouthed words, and that I should not use that kind of language. It was bad language. Had another man that explained to me, he said, you should not use the word golly, gosh, because those are euphemisms for God. And that is actually taking God's name in vain. If you say, well, by golly, I used to work for a guy saying, well, yep, that's right, by golly, he would say. Now, these most religious people, if you said by golly, would be all right. But if you said by God, now that's vulgar, profane, and obscene. Now, it's neither foul, vulgar, profane, perverted, or obscene. None of the above. And as a legal analyst, we would have to take a look at the definitions of these words, foul mouth, vulgar, profane, perverted, and obscene, and then code plead it out to find out, is this guy really foul-mouthed, vulgar, profane, perverted, or obscene, just like the word liar. Now, a liar is somebody that does not tell the truth. He has shaded the truth, lied outright. Or maybe he has omitted telling you something that he ought to have told you, and therefore led you to a false conclusion by withholding the truth, which is just another form of lying. It's another form of fraud. Government does it regularly. Bankers, preachers, all kinds of people lie to you by omission, by not telling you the rest of the story, as old Paul Harvey used to say. So let's take a look at the word vulgar over here. Let me make an observation. Jesus was vulgar. George Gordon is vulgar. George Gordon is a liar. Jesus was not a liar. Now, there was only one guy that didn't lie, and that was God. And he said, let God be true, though every man be found a liar. Now, lying isn't always a crime. It is sometimes, in fact, it could even be most of the time, and God said that all liars are going to have their part in the lake of fire. And God says, I am the God that cannot lie. And so I've got talents way beyond God. Yeah, think about it. He can't lie, but I can. I can tell the truth, he can tell the truth. I can lie, he can't. I've got talents beyond God. So do you. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to lie. It just means that we have, past tense, have recently, and will probably lie again in the future. We can tell the truth, but we don't all the time. Most of the time we do. Some of the time we don't. And so, therefore, we're liars. So, accusing me of being a liar is what we call hypocrisy. You know, if you're going to accuse me of being vulgar, then you can't be. And do you remember President Nixon? See, publicly, President Nixon was just he was a Puritan. No, he was a Quaker. I'll take that back. He was a Quaker, and he was just the pinnacle of virtue, wasn't he? He never used bad words. He never used euphemisms. But on the tapes, you know, behind the scenes when he was talking to his staff and we got to listen to the tapes, he was pretty foul-mouthed. Did you notice that? I mean, he used some real sailor language there, didn't he? All right. So he was a hypocrite. Now, one thing that's not on the list here, I have yet to listen to one of you people out there call me a hypocrite. I haven't had anybody do that. So far, everybody, I think, is pretty well agreed that if George Gordon said it, that's what he meant. And I didn't stutter. That's what George Bush Sr. said. He said, "Watch my lips." Remember that? Watch my lips, Bush. All right, here's what vulgar means. And I'm taking this now from the 1828 Webster's Dictionary, an old dictionary, 1828. It says vulgar. It's a Latin word that comes from vulgus, V-U-L-G-U-S. It means the common people, the vulgus, the common people, pertaining to the common unlettered people. Well, that just fits me like a T. I am a common unlettered person. I'm a high school dropout. I went to school, went to public school, but I didn't get lettered. I did get a GED, if that's being lettered. I do have some other educational achievements, you know, from JETMA Technical Institute, and they gave me a piece of paper and said, "Hey, this guy's a jet mechanic." Although, I wouldn't want to fly in the airplane that I worked on. And then I got another piece of paper from, I forgot now what the name of the school was, but I trained as an insurance adjuster. Got my piece of paper, got my diploma. I never did go to work for the companies out there, but I'm a trained insurance adjuster, and I got all the inside skinny and scoop, you know, or the inside poop, as they would say, which is vulgar, but it's not dirty or obscene, nor is it profane. Poop is okay. I can say that on the air. Going on, it says, vulgar is used or practiced by common people as vulgar sports, vernacular. It might be more useful to the English reader to write it in our vulgar language, common, used by all classes of people, as the vulgar version of the scriptures. Did you know that the scriptures were vulgar? Yeah, just in case you didn't know, yes, the scripture is vulgar. Jesus was vulgar. George Gordon is vulgar. But the religious people aren't vulgar. The college professors, the teachers, the aristocrats, those that speak the king's English, they're not vulgar. Queen Elizabeth is not vulgar. The aristocracy, the earls, the knights, the dukes, you know, the barons, the aristocracy, they are not vulgar. They speak the king's English. They do not use bad words. They don't use vulgar words. Bankers, doctors, lawyers, professional people, they use the King's English. They are not vulgar people. If you want to know who is vulgar, let me give you a short list here of you know, typical, average, run-of-the-mill vulgar people. Let's see, I've got a list here somewhere. I wrote it down. Come on, George, find it here. Nope, that isn't it. Let me pull this one out right here. Let's see what we got here for vulgar. Oh, yeah, here we go. The nobility, landowners, the business community, educated, the rich, the church, the religious people, all of these people speak the King's English. The people who are vulgar and speak the vulgar language or impolite words, it's the commoners, the politically incorrect, the poor, halt, maimed, beggars, prostitutes, thieves, whores, sinners, miners, workers, smiths, sailors, and soldiers. Or it is the politicians, the preachers, the doctors, the dentists, the teachers, the professors, the business leaders, judges, lawyers, and officers who are politically correct and use the King's English. Have you got that? Let me see if you're in this list. Are you a politician, a preacher, a doctor, a dentist, a teacher, a professor, business leaders, judges, lawyers, and officers, police officers, They don't use bad language. They always use politically correct language. And it's politically correct. It's the King's English. Now, over here on the other side, the people that are vulgar, the people that are politically incorrect, are the soldiers, the sailors, the carpenters and plumbers, the electricians and whores, the prostitutes and comedians, the actors and the prisoners. We are the people who are politically incorrect, like Jay Leno. He's vulgar, common, politically incorrect. And same thing with the other guy on the other channel. What's his name? David Letterman. You ever heard of David Letterman? Common, uses bad words. Well, he doesn't use bad words. He's on a major network, and he's following the law of the FCC and the law of the Supreme Court of the United States. So we have censors. We have the religious people, and we have the politically correct people. They are the censors of society. And they have an agenda, and they have a determination, and they determine what is and is not vulgar, what is and is not politically correct, what is and is not good for us to speak. Then they want to send us to their schools, and they want to preach and teach and tell us what it is that we ought to say and how we ought to say it. Now, Jesus, on the other hand, was one of the vulgar people, and it's called the vulgar scriptures. Did you know that? Yeah. Did you know that the word piss is in the Bible 8 times? And it talks about men who piss against the wall. Did you know that? I'm going to cover that with a little more detail as we progress along. But the word ass is also mentioned in the Bible. And that's politically incorrect now. And it's a vulgar word. Ass, it means donkey. Now, there really isn't anything that's dirty or vulgar or obscene or profane about an ass or pissing against the wall. But the censors, that is Mr. Witt, who took me into the office and explained to me how that was vulgar, and Judy Hartson would never use words like that. Well, okay, that's fine, and I'm not going to rail against you if you use the King's English, but you ought not to rail against me for being vulgar. Going on, vulgar. The common people has no plural termination. Vulgarism, a vulgar phrase or expression. This is the usual sense of the word. A vulgar phrase or expression. Did you notice that we here on the Law Hour, we say the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions, the expressions that you hear on this program? You know, sometimes I use expressions, and I do that in public speaking, and I do it with premeditated forethought. It isn't because I'm ignorant and dumb and I don't know how to use the English language. Sometimes people will say that, though. They'll say the reason that Gordon uses 4-letter words is because his vocabulary is so limited. He's unlettered, vulgar, illiterate, and politically incorrect. And a cult leader. Now, I've addressed cult leader, tax protester, tax fraud. But, you know, the reason that Gordon uses 4-letter words is because his vocabulary is so limited. I'm not sure that my vocabulary is as limited as you think it is. But that doesn't mean that, in public speaking, that we would want to use words that are necessarily politically correct all of the time. For instance, there's an auto parts store up in Hay Fork, California. And it's called the Old Farts Auto Parts. Now, that's a very catchy title. And it describes auto parts in the common vernacular. Now, the word fart, F-A-R-T, is not necessarily a bad word. Now, the censors, the religious censors, have determined that it's a bad word. It's vulgar. It's common. They prefer to use flatulent. So let's put that one in there. It's the old flatulent auto parts. Somehow, boys and girls, that just doesn't, it just isn't very catchy, is it? The old flatulent auto parts. Or how about the old gas passer or past gas auto parts. See, Old Farts Auto Parts expresses exactly what the owners of the store want to express. They're old, they pass gas, so they're old farts who are flatulent and pass gas, but they're using the vernacular, they're using the common language of the common man. And that's because college professors don't buy auto parts. They take their car to Mr. Goodwrench. They're not trying to reach, they're not trying to communicate with police officers. Police officers don't buy auto parts. Their patrol cars are fixed in the shop somewhere. These people that are in the Old Farts Auto Parts store, they're trying to reach loggers and lumbermen. They're trying to reach the carpenters and plumbers and electricians, you know, the guys that fix their own cars on the weekend, the shade tree mechanics. And so by using that word, F-A-R-T, in place of flatulent, they communicate on a level with the people that they're trying to sell the auto parts to. And if they were trying to communicate on the level of old flatulent auto parts, then nobody would buy their auto parts, because college professors and the people that are the teachers and the doctors and the dentists and the lawyers and the professionals, they don't fix their own cars and they don't buy auto parts. And the people that do wouldn't trade there, because these people don't even speak the language. So boys and girls, when you hear me on the air using vulgar language, I'm not doing that accidentally. I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind. I'm communicating with the people that I want to talk to. Now, to give you an illustration as to how Jesus handled this, there was a time when a guy came up to him one time and said, "Hey, Jesus, you're talking to publicans and sinners." And he said, "Yeah, that's right. I'm talking to publicans and sinners. It came to pass, as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples." When the Pharisees, when the Christians, when the religious people saw it, they said to his master, "Why does your master eat with publicans and sinners? Why does this guy associate with sailors and soldiers and carpenters and plumbers and electricians?" And Jesus, when he heard that, he said to them, "They that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick." So when you hear me speak in gutter vernacular, when I'm talking to the sailors and the soldiers, I'm talking to the carpenters and the plumbers and the electricians, and we speak the vulgar language, we speak the language of the commoners, there isn't anybody out there, there isn't a soldier on an aircraft carrier anywhere that doesn't understand fart, F-A-R-T. He might have a problem with flatulent. He might not understand passing gas. But he won't have any problem understanding old farts, auto parts. Now, that's not dirty, it's not obscene, it's not foul-mouthed. And the word piss, P-I-S-S. These people, these censors, have made these words, evil, a reproach. And they've taken other words like gay and applied it to a sodomite, and they make that word righteous. Listen, there's no point in using the word gay to identify a sodomite. They're about as far away as day and night. They're at opposite poles. They don't seem to have any problem doing that, but if you do that, you are vulgar. All right, I'm out of time, so let me give you a reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.